So welcome to the final Crux of It of the season. So originally scheduled for June, I think you'll understand why we have to bring it forward. So as you were in the last episode with our panel consisting of Ben Robinson, Dave Hughes and Steve Ovenden, aka Yorkie the Lion. But tonight we've got pints in hand, we're on location at Haxton Sports Bar, so thank you to Ben for having us. And we can't look further than Tuesday evening really, so a bit like Barnett away, it was an incredible atmosphere. The night was spoiled really by the game kicking off. And similarly to Barnett, it was an evening where absolutely nothing went right. So Ben, you were in the South Stand, or you were for at least 85 minutes of it. What's your reflections a few days on?
One of massive disappointment really. Everything that I was worried about going into the game sort of came true. We just once again in a big game, just didn't play to the occasion. Oldham played it absolutely perfectly. You know, we can talk about the excuses of, you know, the big gap we had, or the fact that, you know, Oldham had that extra game. Reality is we just weren't good enough on the night. Too many players just did not step up. I thought Joe Felix wasn't the same Felix we've had all season. Alex Hunt just wasn't bringing the ball forward and playing it forward. It was constantly backwards. Ollie Pearce got marked out of the game, but at that point in those sort of games, he needs to step up and start to find space and really try and get in to have a shot. You know, the lack of shots we had were very disappointing, and Oldham just did us over absolutely perfectly. And it's a real big shame, really, because before the game, I was really up for it. Two big teams, big match, sell out, you know, a bit of naughty behaviour in terms of smoke bombs and pitch invasions, which is absolutely lovely to see from my point of view. Because
you shouldn't be doing that at your age, to be fair, with your profession, but carry on.
Otherwise, just a total disappointment, really. I think it's not the way any of us wanted the season to end. It's not what this squad deserve, but it is what it is. We all know the rules at the start of the season. Just thankfully, we all saved £200 now from having to go to Wembley.
Yeah, and a lot of people bought tickets and even travel, didn't they? Which I can understand why people were doing that. I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, Dave, but I wondered whether we missed the trick maybe before the deadline, not getting more defenders in. You know, you look at on the night having to play Sinclair again at right back, and I don't think he had a particularly bad game, but you sort of compromise, aren't you, when Crooks goes down injured again, and Jeff King wasn't even on the bench, and, you know, no defenders on the bench. It seemed like mad, really, at that stage of the season in such a big game when we've had such a good season to not have that flexibility with the squad on such a big occasion.
Absolutely. I think it's been a great season in many respects, but absolutely there's been frustrations with certain positions on the pitch. I think that the right back was a glaring error. I think the lack of quality there. I think that, as you say, with Jeff King, I mean, we don't know what's happened. It was a real shame that Crooks was out. You know, I'm not going to suggest that if you'd said to everyone, who do you think will be injured for the game, it would be Adam Crooks. I think, you know, obviously he's had his issues, but we really could have done with somebody in there. I also think somebody more bullying in midfield. The lack of aggression and fight was very difficult. And I think that the service that Ollie didn't get didn't help as well. I think he was, I agree with everything Ben said, like he was basically played out of the game. Like it was completely ineffective, and the same with Joe Felix as well. For me, it's one of those things we've got to address next season. We've got to make sure that the key positions are filled, but also that we have squad players who can slip into those positions as well, and squad players who are comfortable playing there, so that if there is an occasion like there was on Tuesday, we can step up, because like Ben said previously, we just won at the races on Tuesday.
Yeah, would you, I mean, when we did the preview show, we said, he pretty much said he'll play the same team against Eastleigh, which would have had Crooks in. We didn't kind of factor in that he might not have been fit, but having seen that on the lineup on the night, I thought Felix was going to play right back. Would you have played Felix at right back?
I would have played him at right back. I think one of the problems that potentially Adam would have seen is that the lineup from Oldham, big, imposing, physical squad, and we all saw what happened with Halifax, playing the ball high, bringing it down. You know, it was that thing. You can understand that he wanted physicality, and with all due respect to Joe, he's quite diminutive. You know, he's an absolute whippet, but in that position, maybe Adam went, man, do you know what? We need some more height. It could be that simple. Now, obviously, we weren't in the training ground, but I would have, yeah, I would have definitely played him there myself. I think, and I think the majority of fans would have agreed as well.
One of my favourite parts of the night, Dave, was when I was asking for people's reflections after the game, and you left a voice note, and I didn't get a chance to listen to it till the next morning, because I think, and then he just said Josh Stone's song, A Real Toe Tapper.
To be fair, one of the things that I quite enjoyed, it was clear that we weren't going to win. I mean, the Oldham fans were incredible. You've got to give them their credit. They were absolutely there from minute one all the way through. And some of the chants they'd come up with were great. You know, I mean, it's football, isn't it? And if the boot was on the other foot and we had something like that, they probably would have gone, yeah, you know, fair play. It was very catchy. Yeah.
Well, we did, didn't we, at Oldham's place? We were singing Josh Stone's name because we knew it would rub it in and stuff like that. And that's just football banter, isn't it? And it was hard for the fans, wasn't it? I thought they made such a good effort with the flags and everything and the atmosphere, like you said, and a bit of naughtiness going on. But to go 3-0 down... so early, it just felt then that Oldham always looked like they were going to get the next goal and not us, and it was flat, wasn't it, from the fans? But you couldn't really blame the supporters, because how do you rally them when the tie's effectively over?
It's one of those things, isn't it? We all say before these games everyone's going to be with them from minute one, and we were. And I mean, you know, I'm sure from the pitch Steve will have seen, it must have looked spectacular in the South Stand. I mean, the display was great. And the noise was brilliant, certainly coming when we were in the back of the South Stand, it sounded incredible. But obviously, straight away, we're out the traps, we're gone, and it was quite clear after the first few minutes that Oldham were on top. And obviously, when the first goal went in after that, I mean, it was just, that really, I think the fan base sort of took a breath in and went, what's going on? This isn't how it should have been, this isn't how we wanted it to be. And it was a massive occasion, and I think it is another example of us as a team not turning up. And it might be the pressure, and I think I said this on the previous podcast about the worry that the pressure of the build-up could be too much. And I think, again, you know, we just succumbed to that pressure.
But even in the first half, at half-time I was thinking, I don't think we can play any worse than that. And I was sort of thinking, I don't know whether Oldham can play any better either, but I was wrong about both. I mean, 5 minutes into the second half, we just imploded, didn't we? It was so sad to watch, really, because it was just sort of, you're thinking, gone 96 points and it's been for nothing.
Yeah, and I think we could talk all night about the playoffs and how the structure of the playoffs is and who plays who and whether there's actually any advantage in finishing second or third, because clearly, you know, we finished with those 96 points. During the whole season, we were vastly a better team. It's there to see. But obviously, it comes down to that one game. For us, it came down to that one game. And unfortunately, we just crumbled.
Yeah. And Steve, I'll come on to you. 95 goals in a season, but no shots on target in the game that it really needed to matter. What? It's hard to explain, isn't it, really?
I just couldn't believe it. I was just lost. Funnily enough, I missed all of Oldham's three goals. I had my back... When Harrison picks the ball up, I was trying to get the crowd continuing to sing. Who, just want to say, the guys have touched on, the crowd were incredible. Lots of colour, lots of red. The noise of the South Stand, please do it again next year. Even the main stand, the noise was deafening. I couldn't hear Oldham. So it was just an incredible night. So I didn't see the first goal, had my back to that, and then I was sort of told I had to leave the arena, as it were, at half time on instruction of the stadium and the police. Not even going to touch that, but anyway, I did. So I'm up getting changed, hear the cheer for the second goal, and I didn't see the third goal either. So yeah, just.
So you didn't hear Oldham, you didn't see any of the goals, so you think it's 0-0?
Yeah, well, if only it were. Thankfully, looking at the game, the last 40 minutes or so, 35 minutes from a box, with a stunned disbelief look on my face, because I just can't believe, getting back to your original question, we've been magnificent this year. The 95 goals has been an absolute joy. I mean, so many good moments that we've come on to. To be flat and devastated 10 minutes after half time, it was just awful. It was almost like going to a funeral, and I put a caveat to that. Obviously nobody died, we lost a football match, but it was just so bad. Such a bad feeling.
And Ben, when people have asked me about the tactics on Tuesday, I don't want to say that Adam has only got plan A, because that sounds incredibly harsh for a team that's got 96 points, but I do think there is a blueprint to beat us, or there has been this season. You know, Boston away, Altrincham away, Barnet away, those that can match our intensity and stop us playing have had success, haven't they? But very few have been able to do it over the season. What surprised me was that a team could come to our place and do it. All those other real bad performances, I think, have happened away. And that was what shocked me about the fact that we were at home. We had, you know, a lot of advantages really going into the game. But to lose 3-0 on your own patch, it's even more galling, isn't it?
I think perhaps we maybe didn't give Oldham enough credit on Easter Monday. You know, that we all kind of just swept it under the carpet. It was a bad performance from us, really, when, you know, after what's happened in the playoff semi-final, perhaps it was Oldham were just starting to get into a bit of form and knew how to manage us. And, you know, credit to Oldham, Mickey Mellon did an absolute masterclass on us on Tuesday night. And you look at how they just bullied us off the ball and made sure we had no control like we normally do, you know, just seeing us at the back, just passing it around, but we weren't going forward at all. They just knew how to keep us in that area. And you look at Barnett's lineup last season to this season, it's a very similar sort of starting 11 they've had. What they've done, though, is they've improved their bench big time and their reserves coming in. You know, there's a reason why we haven't seen Ricky Aguiar for a long time, I don't think. There's a reason why Dan Batty, at the start of the season, was starting a lot of games and now he's on the bench. I don't think Hinchelwood believes in these players enough in terms of their ability and quality. And when you've then got players like Aguiar and Batty coming on to replace Hunt and Felix and Armstrong, you're starting to look at a team that, you know, we're not adding to it. You know, sort of thinking back to when we had Gary Mills, you knew Jamie Reid was going to come on at some point and there'd be a pretty good chance he'd get us a goal. I haven't seen that from Josh Stones yet. You know, I don't know if that's a positioning thing or sort of...
I felt he was trying too hard a bit on Tuesday, you know, and I think it was probably difficult, wasn't it, with his... He's desperate to do well for us, full stop, but he's even more desperate the fact it was Oldham and singing, you know, chanting about him. And for a young lad, it's probably quite hard to say. I felt he was, you know, he was giving away silly fouls, wasn't he, and just overcommitting. And it has been hard for him. I mean, he got a hat-trick, didn't he, in that game against Wokingham, and I don't think he started since. It's tough for him.
You can definitely see the quality in him. He's... definitely there, but he's competing with Ollie Pearce, and it's like, no wonder it's so difficult for him to get run the games together and get some form together. It must be really tough being Josh Stones and constantly not knowing where you're playing or what you're doing. But you know, he came on and he just didn't feel like it was the right game for him to come on to. You know, he didn't feel like he was necessarily going to get us a goal and get us back in it. I do think if we got one, perhaps Oldham might have started to crumble a little bit themselves and start to worry,
and the crowd would have got going again, wouldn't they?
But you know, that never happened. They marked us out of it perfectly. And I think that's what we need to do, is realise that Barnett got rid of Marvin Armstrong a couple of years ago. You know, we took him on and he was exactly what we needed at the time. But perhaps is Marvin Armstrong the person who's going to win us the league? Don't know. But there's a reason Barnett got rid of him. And I think there's a reason why we're not seeing Aguiar play or Dan Batty play. You know, if Dan Batty, who was probably one of the best midfielders we've said for the past couple of years, he hasn't been starting recently, how do we know he's going to have the impact coming on?
You see, you mentioned Alex Hunt earlier. I felt like Alex Hunt was almost playing... He was so deep on Tuesday, but he was almost playing that role that Dan Batty was at the start of the season. I'm not quite sure that's his best place, really. I think he's a bit more creative and should be a bit further forward, but you could just see him dropping deeper and deeper and deeper, couldn't you? And I think that first goal was always coming. You could, everyone in the ground could see that coming.
There was that, and you know, you had that Mayle and Hunt relationship where Mayle was just holding onto the ball as long as he could in the first half. And I don't know if it was a tactic, but we haven't really done that this season. And we kind of,
think that's because Oldham were waiting. They weren't committing. I think other teams go diving in, don't they? And we just play it around them. Yeah. Whereas Oldham were, they had Fondop and Garner at the edge of about 18 yard box every time we had a goal kick. And they were waiting and waiting and waiting. Clearly that was something that Mickey Mellon had told them to do.
Oh, it worked perfectly, you know. But you could see that then the crowd were getting frustrated that we weren't dealing with any of it. And, you know, we did it early on. We got rid of the ball and released it quickly. But like you said about Hinchelwood and the plan B, I'm not saying it's Hinchelwood's sort of fault or error, but we weren't mixing things up. It clearly wasn't working. They were clearly marking us out. Right, what are we now going to do to try and get past Oldham? How are we going to get the ball and get through? Because there's clearly ways, if they're playing such a high line, when it's we've got our own ball. There's definitely ways around it, but we just needed to start figuring that out much quicker. And when we went 1-0 down, and then those two goals after half-time, absolutely killer. I think that's what shocked me most, was just how we didn't come out fighting in the second half. I think we thought, we'll just pass it around, eventually Oldham will tire, we'll break through eventually, we'll get the equaliser. But they absolutely just hit us. And, you know, like I said several times on the previous podcast, Mickey Mellon is a promotion master. He knows how to play the occasion. He knows how to get the best out of a team when it's a one-off game.
I wonder whether as well, sort of, at Barnet away, when it wasn't working exactly like that, he made a really early sub, didn't he? He took Dan Batty off, I think, that night. And then at half time, I think he brought Stones on, didn't he? Whereas this time, he was almost like, do a wait it out, because that didn't work at Barnet. Dave, I'll come to you. I think Ben's absolutely right. Credit does have to go to Mickey Mellon. I also thought Pett and Evans in that middle of midfield had that little bit more nous than us, and that little bit more experience, which, you know, we might come on to Ollie Banks later on, who looks like he's going to be on his way to York City. And Fondop as well, we just couldn't handle him. I mean, we've seen him play us a few times before, and I don't want to say cart horse, I think that would be a little bit harsh, but I think we've had games before you sort of thought, he's a little bit unconventional, Fondop, we should be at hand. But I mean, to be fair to him, he just bulldozed his way through us time and time and time again. And I think Callum Howe in particular really struggled with that physicality, a little bit like he did with Unlove at Barnet earlier on in the season.
Absolutely. I've got a friend who's an Oldham fan, and during the season we've been chatting, and there has been times when Oldham have, well, fans at Oldham have basically gone, nah, we don't, Fondop, you know, he's like you say, a cart horse, for a better expression. But that physicality and that power and that sheer determination to break through, I think if you look at some of the teams we've come up against this season, and Callum Howe has been a rock. You can't, I mean, he's been,
yeah, 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 we'll come on to him later on.
An absolute credit. But that attacking force hasn't always been present in a lot of our, you know, our adversaries previously. And I mean, you look at Eastleigh, for example. I mean, we had absolutely no issues there at the back. They were just cruising. It was absolutely, you know, that pace and that power really put us on the back foot. And I think that, coming back to what Ben said about Mickey Mellon, he had us sussed from the beginning. You know, he had did his homework. He knew exactly what we were going to do. He probably also knew that there was not really a plan B, and he probably knew that it would be around about 60 minutes that the changes would be made, as was proven. So it was a case of, you know, from him, it's right, attack straight away, off we go, you know, hard. And with Fondop there, again, that really experienced head. And I think, again, like we'll come on to, the experience from the majority of the Oldham squad helped them massively. And on the occasion as well, it helped with that pressure, it helped with the gravitas of the occasion, and they all seemed much cooler heads. And I think that uncharacteristically, there did seem to be some quite hot heads, because obviously, you know, it's that big occasion. And in the York squad, we've done amazing things this season. We've won so many games of football, and obviously we've come up against a team that Oldham away game was amazing, and we brought it back to our place. And that physicality and the power, maybe it's the end of the season, has basically got us unstuck.
Yeah. Steve, obviously there's been some speculation since about a manager, and I think we're on the same page in thinking that there's absolutely no point discussing here, saying certain Twitter accounts. We might come back to that with Room 102 later on. Anything to add?
Nothing to add. I'm not going to speculate on anything. All I will stick to is facts. The facts are, Adam is the manager of the football club. It's not good for anybody. It's not good for fans, it's not good for players, it's not good for the manager to have this rumour land the day after we're all gutted, when emotions are not high, we're all feeling incredibly low. That rumour arrives, and who knows the truth? Adam knows the truth. The board of directors know the truth. Speculation is damaging on so many levels. It's the nature of the beast with football. There's always rumours, but I think it's caught us on the hop. Let's just leave it to the directors, leave it to the manager, and see where we are headed. I'm not going to comment A, because I don't know anything, and B, because I don't think it's helpful.
Fair play. And let's look at the season as a whole then. We did a blind survey of all the Crux of It panel, apart from Debra, to give players marks out of 10, and just I wanted to see what sort of average would be and what people were thinking. as sort of discussion points. So the top five players were Joe Felix, a perfect 10 from everyone. Callum Howe, an average of 9. Malachi Fagan-Walcott, 8.2. Ollie Pearce, 9.8. And Harrison Mayle, 8.6. Now, Debo did leave me a voice note the other day saying that we do need a new keeper, and he doesn't care about the Golden Glove. I mean, that's me paraphrasing. There was a few more kind of expletives in there, as you can imagine, from Debo. So, Dave, thoughts from you on, do we need a new keeper? In fact, I'm guessing you're not, because I think you gave Harrison the highest score out of all of us.
No, I don't think we do at all. I think that Harrison Mayle has been brilliant for us this season. Now, obviously, he's made mistakes. He's human. And with all due respect to him, he's won the Golden Glove. Apologies, Debo. I think that's quite an achievement. But at the same time, he's at this level for a reason. And we can talk about all the squad members that at this level they perform very well. There have been slips, there have been some mistakes. But no, absolutely, for York City, I think he's the man at the back. And the other thing I would say as well is that the players see him as a rock. You look at that defence, when there's been substitutions made, very rarely with the goalkeeping, there has been a definite change in the stature. You can see, like, when the, you know, when you look at that defence, it doesn't matter what formation we've got at the back, there is a lot more tension. They seem to play very well with Harrison. They all seem to be able to know what's going on. So no, I would keep him, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, and I feel like the mistakes he's made this season, a lot of them are because of the way we play. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and you are going to make mistakes. Like Man City make mistakes playing the way that they play. Yeah, so I kind of have a little bit of sympathy for him in that sense. That even the other night, you know, with all due respect, if he was still playing for Dorking, he would have launched a lot of those balls up to halfway. But he's not been asked to do that, is he? He's been asked to play it to the... I mean, you could argue whether Hunt had too many people on him, but if he was shouting for the ball... You just don't know, do you, really?
No, and this fast playing it out from the back has worked. It's worked really well for us this season. And he seems very adept at keeping a cool head in general and absorbing that pressure from the attacking line. And I think that that's one thing that we've lacked with a lot of keepers previously, is there has been a lot of this hoofball. Now, a lot of that's to do with the way the manager's playing. But I do think that if you look at the differences between him and Roy Watson, he's much, much better with his feet and keeping it on the ground, getting it out, and again, absorbing that pressure and playing how Hinch clearly wants him to play. And I think that's one of the main reasons he's stuck at number one, because we can cast our eyes back to the beginning of the season. And there was the situation where they said, oh, well, there isn't a number one keeper. Mm. It's a rotation. Well, that went very quickly by the wayside. And I think that, in my eyes, if the manager, who I respect massively, has put his trust in Harrison the whole season, then he should stay. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, at this level, who's better?
Yeah, I agree. I really rate him. I mean, what's missed from probably choosing that is he made an unbelievable save in that first half from Fondop on the volley, yeah, didn't he? I thought it was an incredible save. But obviously, we forget that now because we just want to... We want to forget that game as quick as possible, don't we? But I thought it was a fantastic save. Ben, you were the only person to give Ollie Pearce less than 10. I mean, I know it was 9 out of 10, but everyone else went for 10. Any particular reason why you marked him down?
I just think in a couple of games, and it's really, really, really harsh here. I think it's a couple of games he could have done... Well, I think mainly the reason is he got that red card in the season, that silly red card, a mark, because we were missing him for, was it just one game or was it three?
I think it was one, wasn't it, because it was one, second booking, yeah.
So, yeah, for that ridiculous behaviour, it was one, but Joe Felix is just way up there, so he was me only 10 out of 10, because I think, you know, Joe Felix has been absolutely superb all season, being an absolute firepower in our midfield, and right back, wherever he's played, he's put 100% in, and he's been the one that's willing to do that dirty work. But Ollie Pearce has also been brilliant as well. I think you've been really harsh there calling me out for 9 out of 10.
There were discussion points. I just thought, why is he 9.8? Who's marked him down? And then I saw it was your name. I thought, well, I can't let him go on that one.
For that singular red card he got marked down a mark for me. But otherwise, I mean, you know, he's been absolutely brilliant. You know, we haven't had anyone since. Was it Brody, the last one that got all the bagels? So for him to be as incredible as that is, you know, absolutely fantastic.
It's almost a 10 out of 10, isn't it, for that?
Yeah, almost, but not quite.
I mean, you're right about Felix as well. I mean, I feel like he's the sort of person when you do lose in a semi-final like that, he's the one you feel probably most sorry for, because you know how much it probably means to him, and B, how much effort he's put in. And similarly with Worthing last season as well, obviously he's fallen short there, and it's gutting for him, isn't it? Because he's, you know, he's given absolutely everything to the shirt this season.
I think that's why every single one of us has fallen in love with this team and this squad, and why even in years to come we'll still end up talking about this team, because the amount of the players that care and put the effort in and really dig in when times are tough have been, you know, absolutely superb. You can think of all the wasters and the chances we've had over the last 5 years that you just wish were nowhere near this football club. Those that were just here to pick up a wage and maybe turn up on a Saturday if they can be bothered. Players like Joe Felix in the middle, just absolutely powering through. Callum Howe at the back, you know, he had a start where, you know, last season maybe wasn't as comfortable, but this season he's taking it up a level and really being that rock at the back. Ollie Pearce, you know, absolutely any opportunity he's had to score, he's got it. You can see really does care and really wants to score. He didn't get off to the best of starts either this season, but he really has grown into the season as it's gone along. And, you know, the likes of Alex Hunt, who, you know, I wasn't sure how he was going to go this season. You know, I thought last season he could go a little bit quiet in games. He's absolutely stepped up. So I think this squad as a whole have been absolutely brilliant, and, you know, it's a shame that it's going to get broken apart a little bit over the summer, you know, as all squads do every year.
Yeah, and I think as well, like you mentioned Alex Hunt there, he came in for some real criticism, as did Harrison the other night, and I sort of thought, yes, I might, you know, you can argue they were at fault for the first goal, but really I feel uncomfortable criticising. Like you say, we've had that many people in the past that have made mistakes but not really given two shits about it, really, for want of a better word, you know, and these guys do. And Alex Hunt, I think, has had a terrific season. I think he's I gave him 9 out of 10. I think he's been a revelation, really. I thought he was good at the end of last season, but he's really come on. He's added more facets to his game, and technically, I think he's a real top player.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fair to criticise him for Tuesday
night.
Yeah,
of course, yeah.
But as a season whole, you know, they've all come on like a bit of a journey almost in terms of the way they've stepped up throughout the season, and constantly, when we've got knocked down, you know, they've come back the next game. You know, I don't think across the season we lost 2 in a row, did we?
No.
Off the top of my head. So I think it was maybe only 2 games we went without a win, because we had a loss and a draw or something. So I think we've, you know, absolutely brilliant. And like the end of the season, was it 8 undefeated we went?
Mm.
And something like we didn't actually not score a goal before that Oldham game on Tuesday since, was it Forest Green away in November? So to go from mid-November all the way until the final playoff game without scoring a goal is absolutely incredible, really. And you can think of many York City squads in recent history where you'd be going into it going, I wonder if we'll even get a chance today, never mind actually, you know, scoring a goal. So it's a credit to Hinchelwood, it's a credit to Matt Ugler, and it's a credit to all the coaching staff and everyone involved to actually create the culture at the club where the team and the players care and want to do well professionally.
And I think you're right about, just to pick you up on what you said about the not losing 2 games in a row, that's massive, isn't it? Because, you know, those players are at that level for a reason, a lot of them, and that is normally down to being inconsistent. You know, the best players in the Premier League, in the Championship, are because they are consistent. But at non-league level, you are going to get people who have maybe 3 games that are good and then one that's... Whereas these players together as a group have not let their standards drop, really, and to not lose back-to-back games is, I think, a really good effort. Steve, one other player that we were trying to score on the throw was Lewis Richardson. I think most people, on average, I think we scored him an 8. Would he be one player that you'd like to see in a red shirt again next season?
Undoubtedly, I'd love to see Lewis back at the club. I think he has been an added spark to our midfield. Definitely one for the future. Clearly, being released by Burnley would do a great job for us. So, yeah, I think I scored him quite highly. And his other one, for the future, you know, he's going to improve with age. He's quite small. I think we probably do need some big, ugly types to come in. But, yeah, I'd have Lewis Richardson all day long. And to cover what the guys have said, you know what, Ollie Pearce, 30-plus goals. How on earth... You didn't score him a 10, Ben. I hear your reasoning, but it's just mental. He's not won Clubman of the Year. Thankfully, he did win that award from the league. He's the Golden Boot. He's been phenomenal. He's been a good player. He's been a great ambassador for the club. He's been great with the charity stuff. He's just been a good laugh. One of the things we like is actually when he does get in the referee's ear and linesman's ear, not everyone's taste. I think he's been brilliant. Big up to Harrison, to Callum, to them all, really. I can just echo what everybody's been saying. What a wonderful, wonderful group of men as well as footballers. So it's going to be disappointing when certain individuals undoubtedly are released. Not going to speculate about that, don't know anything again, but some will go. But to every man that's pulled on a shirt this year in whatever capacity, I'd like to give a big thanks.
What contract are you on?
Me, I'm on a lifetime contract because I'm going nowhere. I'm one of these that's a one club lifetime, so I'll be staying. There's been no discussions. I've probably got to come back fitter/fatter in August, but yeah, no, I'll be back. But to a man, they've been wonderful. I was listening to Fatboy Slim the other day, praise you like I should, and so I think that is a perfect song for them. They should all be praised for their efforts this year.
You should be listening to AI songs now. Come on, Steve, get with the program, Grandad.
Yeah, I'm going to do that just to
just to know Dave. Dave, goal of the season. I think most votes were for Alex Hunt's free kick against Barnet. That was the crux of its goal of the season.
Absolutely.
Thoughts and memories on that one.
Almost getting knocked over at the back of the stand. Just cool, calm, collected, just absolutely powerhouse, absolute powerhouse. And the thing is, I'm not a footballer, and
really?
I mean, I'm big and ugly.
Neither Steve.
We could have that, you know. You want big and ugly people in the squad, you know. Sad, but yeah. I look at the way that he places himself, the way that it's pinpoint accuracy. And again, you know, if you play like games like FIFA, this kind of thing, you know, those are the kind of games that you would, you know, you'd be like, oh, this is incredible. I mean, my son plays these games and he shows me all these slow-mo replays and things all the time. And you don't see anything like that. I mean, he's just amazing. At the end of the day, it was another very high octane game, and it was quite a high pressure game. So, for him to be able to do that was just amazing.
It was his first goal, I think, as well, wasn't it? I'm sure that was his first goal for York.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't know. But yeah, I mean, it was very early on. And I think at that point then, you realise he is a bona fide, you know, he's there. He is another, you know, certain scorer.
Yeah. And Ben, the highlight of the season, having everyone to a man, put Halifax away. So your memories and things on that particular game.
You know what, funnily enough, I was just in the Quaker Wood before this with Hayden Wishart, for those who know him, and we're just talking about what's been the sort of the highlight away game of the season, what's the most underrated one, and obviously Halifax away just came up, you know.
You're going to say Tibbs for your underrated one?
Sadly, not Tibbs on this occasion. The disappointment of a penalty shootout defeat sort of tops a playoff semi-final. Here we go for the North Riding Senior Cup, and that is going to be our year. Our journey to the Riverside will take us there. But yeah, Halifax away, just words don't do it justice. It was one of those that you just had to be there, you know, getting off the train, you know, 2,000 York fans taking over Halifax and sort of going all through every pub. You know, I've never known it in a situation where in a town centre you've got Halifax into one pub and York can have all the rest. You know, it's normally the other way around, if anything. And we were shocking that day. We were really, really poor. You know, that stood out to me big time, just how weak we were.
Again, I suppose you could argue another pressure game. I mean, 2,200 fans, and I know obviously we won that game, and you thought it was a bit of an elite mentality, and it was the sort of game, wasn't it, that you come away thinking, God, if you can do that, you can pull back two goals in injury time when you're not playing well and win. Like, you must be champions. You know what I mean? You start to believe it's your year, don't you?
But yeah, it was one of those games, though, that, you know, anyone who was anyone was there that day. You saw so many faces you recognised. You know, it was absolutely brilliant. And the way it happened, the chaos that unfolded, you know, I don't think I need to tell anyone what actually happened, but the happiness that came out of that terrace at the end was unbelievable. And for the underrated one, we said, was surprisingly Maidenhead away. We'd just been knocked back by Barnet 3-1, starting to question, can this team actually do it? Can we still finish second or third, even if we don't win the league? and just the chaos that me and Dave had to deal with of getting the trains down there. I rocked up 20 minutes in, Dave rocked up at half time, and once again we were so bad, like we were poor. Rory Watson nearly gave away a goal and only saved it from a pass back, and one of the most bizarre situations I've ever seen on a football pitch, caught his own ball on the line and the referee had to go check the rules to see where they took the free kick from. But to then get two sort of 90th minute goals again to win 3-1 and almost kick starters again on a Tuesday night down in London was absolutely brilliant. So we've had so many memories that I'm sure we could talk about for hours of all the away games. You know, I still remember Dagenham away and talk about, you know, Ollie Pearce bursting through at the end and scoring in the last second. You know, we can talk about even sort of going down to Barnet away, despite the disappointment, to have 1,300 fans there on a Tuesday night was absolutely unbelievable. Oldham away on the Tuesday night, Rochdale away, people keep forgetting about, with a 4-0 defeat, 4-0 win. There were so many good days out. Gateshead away, another one. We've been spoilt this season, we really have been. There's so many games where we've spent a load of money thinking, why are we bothering doing this up and down the country every other week? We reap the rewards this season of away trips, and that's what it's all about at the end of the day. You know, reality is we don't really care what goes on the pitch overall. Whatever happens, happens. We can't control that as fans, but what we can control is the trips we have with everyone that we go with, people that we do genuinely care about, and sort of the way we live our lives with each other and support this fantastic football club that, you know, we're kind of blessed but also cursed having. You know, it's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and Dave, you know, you were the same as me, I think, for the lows, and we both put the Boston defeats. And it's really, isn't it, fine margins really over the season, how Barnet only just pipped us to the post and got over 100 points. And you look at those Boston defeats and think, they really were games we shouldn't have. Ironically, I think Boston ended up one of the form teams that second half of the season, but obviously at the time when they beat us, we were both at that away game, weren't we? We lost 3-1. That was their fourth win of the season, and they'd won half of them against us. It was bizarre, wasn't it?
The whole day was rotten. From the pub that we turned up to, and they said, no one's allowed in. We managed to persuade them we could go in, the nearest pub to the ground. We were all driving, there was no drinking going on. And they were like, no, we're fully booked. And the pub was empty. And it's like, from that moment, the whole day was just, it just felt on edge. And we got in there, and there were so many York fans. It comes back to what Ben says. The support this football club has is remarkable. And people I know who support Premier League teams, they look at pictures you might post on social media and they go, goodness me, that is an incredible support. Sometimes a little bit disparagingly, suggesting, oh, well, surprised.
Mm-hmm.
This is your city.
I've never heard of Tibbs.
Yeah. Where's that? Well, I'll inform you about Tibbs sometime. But yeah, I mean, it was just really, really, I mean, Boston don't play a pretty game. It isn't pretty, but it was one of those occasions again where they had us, they read us like a book, and they played and they made the right substitutions at the right time, and they absolutely dominated in parts of the game. And you look at that team, and they were part-time. Now, they're going full-time this season, and Graham Coughlan, to me, seems like a manager who knows his onions, he knows what to do with that squad of players he's got. And I think they're going to be a team to watch next season. And you're absolutely right. We look back on these sort of dark days. Tibbs wasn't a dark day, but it obviously was one of those things in the North Riding Senior Cup. I was at Gisborough the season before. You know, when we went out, and you sort of, these are quite funny. They're quite funny moments because obviously, you know, we don't take it that seriously.
Yeah, Ben does.
I mean, I wanted that Palmo in a bun as much as anyone at Middlesbrough, but unfortunately, it wasn't to be. But yeah, absolutely. Coming back to your first point about Boston, I mean, you know, we will rue the fact that we dropped 6 points because I think had we won those games, it might have been a different story. Maybe we don't know, but it could have been a different story. What I would say is that when we go to these places where they are very difficult, we've got to make sure that we've got a plan B on the pitch. And it wasn't anything to do with the fans, because the fans got behind it all, but it was very, very difficult as a fan in that not particularly inviting away end, shall we say.
Absolutely. But no real reason, Steve, is it for doom and gloom? I mean, 96 points, it's been a fantastic season, like we said. Not a lot needs changing really going forward, does it, in terms of like the personnel, you would think, but full pre-season for Josh Stones, who I think's got a massive season ahead of him next season. Ollie Banks potentially coming in. I think that's not really much of a secret. So reasons to be cheerful.
Oh, loads of reasons to be cheerful. You know, we said at the end of the season before we wanted some improvement, and if 10 or 20% took us into mid-table, we'd have been happy. I think we've touched on this several times. We wanted a bit more and knew there'd be a bit more. There won't be as much of an improvement next season, but get 10%. Get 10% of 96 points, you're going to be 105. You know, we've seen other teams that narrowly miss out. Some fall back the year after. But most, if they keep that squad together, gain a little bit more momentum. We get 205 points, we'll be champions next year. Get 5%, you know, it's going to be a tough league. I think it's going to be an incredibly tough league, because I think Carlisle will have a few quid to throw at it. Morecambe will be one of those magical days by the seaside, but I think they're going to be largely shit. but you do have one of Oldham or Southend going to stay down. You're going to have Forest Green in there. So again, this year coming, there could be four or five sides who are really up there. And then add to that, you know, we won at Rochdale, but they were quite consistent this year. Halifax will be, you know, it's going to be a tough league.
Tough league. I mean, only one goes up automatic. That's a...
But we'll get a full pre-season into Josh Stones. Hopefully, channel his anger. Hopefully, he gets away to an early start with goals. Because I agree with what we said earlier tonight. I think in the Oldham game, he was trying too hard, and there was a bit of trying too hard when he arrived, and then he settled and he got a few goals. And I think there was a bit of, as Ben said earlier, Ollie trying too hard in those first weeks, and you almost just need one to go in off their arse or something. But once they get away and they get going, so you know, there's masses to be positive about. One or two new faces, I don't care how big and ugly they are, I think that would quite be a good thing. I think we probably just need a physical presence. It might be one or two who can really go and smash somebody up if it needs it. You know, the football, I've absolutely adored the football we've played this year, passing it around. Take the points about not being a plan B, and if that plan B is just to launch it forward for 20 minutes in a game and we've got somebody giving an elbow or somebody in midfield.
Yeah, because I don't think we need, and that's the thing about Banks, and he is a really good player, he's got a great track record. I mean, people might question his age, but I don't, you know, he's not 35, 36, is he? He's definitely got another two seasons at least in him, and I think he could make a huge difference. But you don't want too many of that, because it'll completely change the way that we play, won't we? But I definitely think two or three like him, and we'd be well set, wouldn't we, really?
Just to clarify, I saw him at the game the other night, and he's not ugly. So if he, you know,
I didn't say he was.
No, I just think we need somebody big and ugly, and we just need one or two of those individuals coming in to give us that difference. Because
you asking me if he had any ugly mates or what? What's his thing? How's his?
I mean, just big and horrible, and you know, the word is shithousery. You know, sometimes we had Ollie chirping in linesman's ears, but we didn't. I got frustrated. I probably got semi-famous for my arsing around laying on the floor taking the piss out of goalkeepers, wasting time. We never really indulged in any of that this year, but I think that's because we've got a good group of players who didn't have to. But maybe there is a time for some of that naughtiness that creeps into the game if you need it. But we'll be good next year.
I love the way you started off with all this 10%, 5% and all this mathematical kind of formulas going on in your head, and then you got to Morecambe and you were just like, nah, they'll be shit. Thanks, Steve. So on to room, we're not going to do weakest link this time, but a room 102, and I think you want to have the first thing to go in it. Is it something to do with a Twitter account that people might be unaware of?
It's not. I'm not going to be going after any individuals. I mean, I'm being a bit sort of taunting of the guy who claims to know everything and just announces nothing. York City Info or something, I've named him now, but into room 102 for me are people who claim to know something but know bugger all, because they just cause division. They sow division, and that's all that's happened with these rumours that I'm not going to talk about. A rumour comes out, no one really knows if it's true or not, but it has people calling out the chairman, it has people calling out Adam and his loyalty, and it's just bollocks. I'm sorry for using that word because you try not to get us to swear on here. It helps nobody at all. Certainly doesn't help the players, doesn't help the manager, doesn't help the chairman. So if you don't know something, don't try and claim that you do. And if you're a real big fan, Info in York City or whoever you are, you won't name yourself, you hide behind a pseudonym, and you're claiming all these things that are truth. Well, produce your sources. So it's that type of person that really get on my nerves, so they must go into room 102. Must go into room 102.
I mean, that kind of claim to know a lot, but no bugger all. I think that's been described as, for this podcast, people are on the panel. But Dave, anything to add? Anything different to going 102? Or can you beat that?
Oh, I can't beat it. But something that's very close to my heart is the catering at the LNER.
Come on, Dave, get it off your chest.
Or the lack of catering. One of the things that we are hamstrung with here, contracts that I know nothing about, but go back to the beginning of the stadium, and we've been tied into these contracts with a national catering company. And when you're queuing and there is a massive queue at half time, and the lack of speed and the lack of prepared pints, for example, you know, having things ready, you know, it's the same company that do the races, and they managed to do it at the races and handle those numbers. So doing that, but the lack of food, decent food, and there's a pucker pie there, there's hot dogs, but
the hot dog, hot dog's £5.
It's £5. And that is rough. I had a better hot dog at Horbury, and that's saying something. The Horbury hot dog, the world famous Horbury hot dog. That's a ground hot this season that we won't talk about. But when we talk about the catering at other clubs as well, and it's something, obviously it's quite funny, but it's one of those things that the experience, and people talk about match day experience, and it's those things that new fans or new families coming in, or even those of us who've been going long time, we, you know, it's things like that. We would spend more money, you know. Mm. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, you know, we'll go, we have our Prezzo Tuesdays where we go and have some food beforehand. If it was a really good offer, like at Hull, for example, Hull City, which we, you know, I've been to Hull, and you know, not for any particular reason other than the food. Somebody said to me, oh, you know, go and check out the food. It, that kind of thing, it has an effect. I've got a young child, you know, and he's like, oh, can I get something at half time? It's like, he doesn't want a hot dog. You know, Mike,
I can't blame him, to be fair.
But it's, yeah, for me, it's the catering. It needs to go in the bin. And we need to get in local suppliers, bring in people from the city, people like Yuzu, or there's dozens of people you can bring in.
Imagine that, a bow bun at half time.
Exactly.
That's the future, Dave.
It is the future.
Anyone who'd sort of say Kidderminster Harriers in the last 10 years, you would immediately think about that as an away trip and think of the catering, wouldn't you? I know that guy's sadly no longer with us, but they used to have some epic kind of cottage pies, curries, didn't they?
Well, the last time we were there, my son got some Smarties that were 6 months out of date, Dan. So unfortunately for me, my only experience has been negative with Kidderminster Harriers. But yeah, previously to that, yeah.
Okay.
It was good.
Sorry. Ben, anything to add? You had a very eloquent, I was listening back to the one about the grounds that you did about not being behind the goal. It was very well put. I don't think we got enough credit really from people in the aftermath. What say you put in room 102 this time?
Not quite as much as that this time. It's a little bit more simple. Just going back to Dave's very quickly, Kidderminster Pies, my mate, who he knows who he is if he's listening to this, snuck in on a Tuesday night in front of me at Kidderminster and got the last cottage pie. Didn't even feel any shame about it either. So I got stuck with a cheese and potato pie there. We're furious. Anyway.
Name him.
Yeah, I'll save him the shame on this occasion. But I tell you what, if he crosses me again like that, you know, we'll string him up. But we'll, my 102 this week is the playing of Hey Jude before the games at the LNER. Every club has it, you know. Loads play it. And does it really get the fans going? I don't really think so, to be honest. I think it's a little bit generic.
Is it a bit Sweet Caroline?
Yeah, it's played far too loud. Let the atmosphere build naturally. It was done perfectly in the playoffs. It just let it build naturally. But the games, other games, you can see the lads in the block at the front of the south stand. absolutely superbly start by getting the atmosphere going just before the game starts, and then next thing you know, Hey Jude gets played on really loud, and although it gets maybe a few other stands joining in, it just kills the atmosphere in that block before the game, and they then have to try and start it up again. It's generic. We need to find something that's a little bit more personable, and I get that Shed 7 maybe isn't everyone's cup of tea, and maybe Chasing Rainbows isn't the be-all and end-all, let's get everyone going before a game, but there's got to be better out there than Hey Jude, you know. The Beatles are half gone anyway, so we need you know, we need to bring something a little bit better and a bit more York City, you know. We want to be proud of our club, we want to be proud of our city and our heritage and where we come from. Let's give us something that is Minster Men worthy.
Half the Beatles have gone. What a quote. Yeah, I mean, we can probably come back with AI. Who knows? So as it's the end of season special, I'm going to add all of them to room 102. But
absolute cop-out. Absolute cop-out.
A bit like you with Ollie Pearce with 9 out of 10. So, yeah, thank you everyone who's listened to our ramblings over the season. Massive increase on our downloads, which, given how much brilliant York City content there is, both official and unofficial, out there, it's a real privilege to have the listenership that we do, so thank you again for listening to us. Reminder, it's for a charity, York Hospital Radio, so if you do enjoy these podcasts, please consider donating. It's justgiving.com/York Hospital Radio. But until then, as I say, keep the faith.